This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To Berlin, to Judy Dempsey, a senior scholar for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, to look very carefully at Europe here at the beginning of 25 and its challenges following the reporting from Strategic Europe, a newsletter I recommend to everyone to sign up for. It comes right to your inbox, and you can read through the challenges for our trade partners, the European Union, and then to combine that with the NATO pieces. Judy, a very good day to you. The first challenge I read from Strategic Europe is security. There are also items, smaller versions of that, for example, investing in the defense industry in Germany and other parts of the EU is now considered to be a wise move after having it not moved for many years. And there is the larger NATO with Finland and Sweden, and there is the unsolved matter of Ukraine. This as the challenge for Europe. To your understanding, is the European Union, von der Leyen, and the leadership in Brussels, are they confronting this, or are they still understanding themselves as chiefly a trade organization and not a military organization? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me on your show, and a happy new year to you and all your listeners.
Thank you.
Well, von der Leyen, Ursula von der Leyen, is German, head of the EU Commission, president, that's the executive. Actually, she's out of action for the next 2 weeks because she's got very serious pneumonia. So she's back in Germany in Hanover with her family. That's the first thing. Secondly, while she understands the need for the EU as the EU to have a kind of defence structure, the member states are all asunder and disagreeing on how it should be financed, what would it mean, what would it mean for the sovereignty and national interests of the various armament groups and of the politicians, of course, and coming up to election time. This is defence is still a very controversial word for at least some parties, especially here in Germany, as it's facing election in February.
The letter from the editor, Ryan Mumtaz, I hope I say that, Rim Mumtaz, say it correctly, includes this contradiction about peace party and war party. And yet the investment class is not so cautious. I see that in the numbers of investing. Germany has a defense industry that is not vigorous these last years. Is that going to change? Just let's look at the German manufacturing skills.
Well, the German defense industry is actually thriving through exports, and not just because of the Russian attack on Ukraine, but exports to the Middle East, arms exports to the Middle East and other countries. So they're in good shape in that sense, but they're held back politically on what kind of weaponry they're going to actually export or sell or give to Ukraine. But in terms of the overall defense outlook in the European Union, it's not very good, actually. There's not enough collaboration. There's too much duplication. Some countries aren't spending enough. But this whole debate about spending, it's a question of what they spend it on and for what. And so we have divisions within the EU member states, with Finland, the Poles, the Czech Republic and others spending much more than, say, France, Germany, Spain and Greece. It's the defence structures and the defence idea hasn't really taken proper root yet in Europe, despite what's happening in the United States, despite what's happening with China, Russia and in Ukraine.
The second challenge, according to Rim Mumtaz, and I follow the logic, is the Transatlantic Alliance challenge, a.k.a. Donald Trump. There was great anxiety before the election about Mr. Trump's second term. Has that abated at all in these last weeks of watching Mr. Trump make decisions about his cabinet and about his goals as for the second term? Or is Europe still exceedingly cautious?
I think Trump has spelled out what he's going to do. I mean, he's liable to change his mind, but certainly tariffs is a big issue. Tariffs against the EU, tariffs against China, tariffs against Canada, tariffs against Mexico. I mean, he's warned so many of his partners what to expect. But there's a certain unpredictability. We'll have to see how he's going to deal with the whole essence of the post-1945 structures, the multilateral structures of NATO, of the United Nations, of the International Monetary Fund, of the World Bank. These are all the multilateral organisations upon which the West was built after 1945. And if he's going to criticise these or undermine them, what do you replace them with? And what will this do for the credibility of the West? So intellectually, I think this is a big worry among European leaders, but they're not coming up with any kind of suggestions either. They're biding their time and are all rushing to visit Trump and try to get on with him and try to have some kind of relationship with him. But it's very, very early days.
Yes, I see the Prime Minister of Italy is up front in visiting with Mr. Trump, photographed winningly in today's news with Giorgia Meloni and Donald Trump giving thumbs up. I turn then to the third mentioned by Rim Montaz, which is China and Russia. The way he writes it very carefully, China and Russia are in the full swing of mounting the most credible threat to the Western-dominated rules-based international order since its inception. Is that a perception throughout the European Union that China and Russia represent hostile?
It is a perception. There's no doubt about this. But it goes back to my earlier point about the fragility of the multilateral system, and indeed the legitimacy and how it's now being absolutely challenged by China and Russia. And I don't see China and Russia backtracking in any way on this. They're really going to test the resolve of the West. They're going to test the transatlantic relationship. And they know Europe isn't ready. Maybe Trump is ready, much more ready perhaps than the Europeans, but we're not in for pleasant, easy sailing throughout 2025. There's an awful lot of issues to deal with, not least how Russia's war in Ukraine is going to end, and of course the whole Syria migration stability issue.
Let's be granular, such as it is. Populism. We discussed AfD at length before the holiday. AfD receives a great publicity boost when Mr. Musk, the richest man in the solar system, SpaceX, Tesla, and now the Doge Committee in the U.S. government, speaks well of Ms. Vidal of AfD and says that the presentation of AfD as a reactionary party is inaccurate. I don't stop there because I go on with populist wave, which is genuine, not just AfD in Germany, but also in Austria. I see the right-wing government or the populist possibilities there for a new prime minister. A national rally in France is long established as right of center. And I note that Mr. Le Pen's passing reminds everyone that this has been a long time building, not Marine Le Pen only. And in London, we have the Reform Party, so-called, led by Mr. Farage, with only five members, but understood as a threat to the Tories as the major opposition. And I believe Mr. Musk has involved himself there in opinion making about Starmer. Now, in America, populism is something that is built into our conversation. I don't know if that's true in Europe. You have many different kinds of populists. You have the populist in Hungary, the populist in Slovakia, the populist in Italy. They're not on the same page when it comes to Ukraine, for example. But is populism something that we can identify genuinely in Europe, or am I using an American word inappropriately?
We've discussed this several times, John. I wonder, is populism the right word? But if you want to use populism, there are various degrees of populism. But what's happening in Austria now, it's a far-right wing party. They call themselves the Freedom Party of Austria. It's far-right. And if you get out of Vienna and you hear what the supporters and members of the FPO say about the past and the Nazis and immigrants and all issues and the EU and America and cozying up to Russia. It's pretty scary, actually. This is an EU member. And then we have different brands of populism, far right wing, certainly. It's, you have it in Hungary. Then we have as you mentioned, Prime Minister Meloni in Italy. She's quite charismatic. Call a populist? Well, she's not far right in many ways. She's populist in the sense that she's trying to control migration. She's trying to deliver. She's trying to get the economy on its feet again. She's not going to go spending all over the place. So there are various elements. But the key point is that the old established parties cannot cope with this new wave that is no longer a wave. It's now a feature of the political systems throughout the EU member states.
And the success of the AfD, we'll come to this when we come to the German election right now, but has Mr. Musk misrepresented the AfD by saying it's gotten a bad reputation by propaganda or media reporting and that it is a populist party? Is he wrong?
Mr. Musk just doesn't like media, the liberal media, frankly. And the liberal media here in Germany, they're terribly sensitive. And so they're all up in arms that Musk is praising the AfD and talking to Ms. Wiedel, the head of the AfD, and supporting her and everything. Is he wrong or is he right? I mean, he has his opinions, and we know where he stands with individuals and leaders who actually are against the establishment and who actually want to change the way politics is conducted. And the problem is that the AfD stands for things that a lot of Germans really don't like. And what is interesting is that he is supporting a party that is anti-immigration, anti-EU, Eurosceptic, anti-NATO, anti-American. And guess what? Where it is strong in parts of Brandenburg, this is where Mr. Musk has his big Tesla factory. He got huge tax breaks from the German government and the government in Brandenburg to set up his company. And now he's praising the AfD at a time when actually the AfD is doing very, very well in the polls. And he's supporting a party which actually is against his own interests if he's not careful about it.
We're going to turn to the German election because it's extremely important for the European Union and NATO in these next years. Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment, senior scholar in Berlin. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.